What a big show for the week four preview. As always, Andy Behrens joins at the top of the show to discuss burning questions and matchups that deserve your attention. Juwan Jennings, we starting this guy now? Now that he's the best receiver in the NFL? Let's find out. As in terms of matchups, hey, Jaden Daniels and that electric Washington offense, talk about circle of trust. They've got another great matchup this week. Later, Tara Roberts joins the show to have an in-depth breakdown about some running backs that may break or make your lineup this week. All that and more coming up on today's show. Let's get into it. It's Friday, September 27th. I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast presented by Toyota, the official automotive partner of the NFL. And it is one hell of a day to talk ball. And join me to do just that here as week four is upon us is the one and only, the absolutely handsome, stunning in his NFL Blitz shirt for the YouTube folks, they can see this, is Andy Behrens. Andy, what's going on, buddy?
Oh, it's a hell of a day to talk ball. It really is. Like, it's not always. Sometimes that's a thing we make up, but this is actually a hell of a day to talk ball. Week four. Week four is fun because we have enough information to be dangerous, but it still is maybe kind of skewed by, strength of schedule and whatnot. And there's still a lot of mysteries, but we have a few clues.
We have a few clues. I always give a shout out to Football Guys Adam Harstead, who, you know, says that once we get to week four, this is where things are kind of become like the new reality. In the first three to four weeks, it's like, okay, ADP is still more predictive than current results. So things are kind of sort of starting to normalize, but there are few exceptions where there's just big changes and units are not what we expected, or there's injuries and things like that. So this is around the time of the season where I feel like we begin to get a little overconfident in what we're seeing, or what we've seen in the first 3 weeks. Like, oh my God, this guy's not doing anything. What are we going to do? We're not going to talk 49. Well, we are going to talk a little 49ers. Actually, I take that back. That is one of the things we have today, but there's a couple of, there's one player in particular there that's like, yeah, the first 3 weeks are probably not going to be as instructive as the next however many. So I'm excited to sort of dive into all of this today. So this is how the preview show goes for the new folks out there. If you are new to the show, you're coming to this podcast in week four. I mean, shout out to you. Appreciate the hell out of you. Andy joins the show in the first part to provide three burning fantasy questions he wants answered and three matchups he says deserve your attention. We have an honorable mention this week as well because we have to talk about this particular game. Then in the back half of the show, Tara Roberts will join me to identify the make or break players that could determine the outcome of your fantasy matchups this weekend. And then Tara and I will finish the show with our keys to winning each week, which is usually just two players that we think you probably got to start this week. So, Andy, let's jump into the three burning fantasy questions that you want answered, starting with that 49ers talking point, which is, does Juwan Jennings have any staying power?
Yeah, I think this is a huge one. And I would refer people to the piece that Scott Pianowski wrote this week on Jennings, which, obviously he's just coming off this crazy game, 175 yards, three touchdowns, double digit catches. And he used the concept of signature significance to get at it, which is like, from the baseball realm, it's like a Bill James phrase, and it basically refers to a player who does something in a single game, which, you know, that's obviously an incredibly small sample and maybe it's meaningless, but a player who does something in a single game that's so rare and so unusual and so exceptional that it actually does have predictive value, and it tells us something about that player. Because if you put that box score together, the list of people who have done it before is so exclusive that we're like, oh wow, you're something different. And in baseball, the most common I think signature significance stat is like, it's like a pitcher who has a 17 strikeout no walk game. Like, the list of players who've done that, it's all Hall of Famers and people who would have been in the Hall of Fame if they'd stayed healthy. It's an incredible list. I don't know if the same concept applies in football, but it's an interesting way to look at it. And basically, you know, Scott looks at the list of people who have had this game or similar, and it's a bunch of impressive names, right? So we knew that Juwan Jennings was a really good pro, like just a real life pro. You know, people put together compilations of Juwan Jennings run blocking. Like he's he's very helpful to an offense. But we'd of course never seen anything like this. He has, you know, he has flash. Like he was great in the postseason last year, great in the Super Bowl, great in that Packers game. But we haven't seen a game like this. And the player that it reminded me most of, just because of where this game fell in Jennings' career, was definitely Miles Austin. Because Miles Austin was a Cowboy for 4 years who, like, in his first start of his fourth season, having not done anything in his career to that point, gave us 10 catches and 250 yards. And it was like, what, you really, you've been hiding this guy for 4 years? It was incredible. And that season was phenomenal. And I don't know that that's what Jennings is exactly. And obviously the Niners offense is, you know, they don't have the desperate need for a receiver that maybe that Cowboys team had. And obviously it's a cluttered, you know, there's a bunch of talent here. Ayuk's going to have big games, and Debo, when he comes back, going to have big games, and Jennings is good, and Kittle is obviously great. So like, I don't know. He's probably not going to have the Miles Austin season, but his game is like that film was good. The offensive concepts are great. And, you know, just the mere fact of having had that game probably tells us something about this player that, you know, I'm definitely thinking differently of him today than I did a week ago.
I would venture to say, and there's no way to check this, but I would venture to say that no fantasy podcast has mentioned Juwan Jennings before week 3, 2024 than this one. Only because I have a sick appreciation for cool role players and especially dudes who block their ass off. I mean, we did a whole video about Juwan Jennings and receiver run blocking at the Super Bowl, you know, when I got to talk to him at opening night, which was great. Because he's just a good player. And, you know, do I think he's a guy that's going to be Miles Austin or whatever? Certainly from a statistical perspective, you're right. He's not going to have that when all these dudes get back healthy. That's just probably not in the range of outcomes. But he's good. And we know that the 49ers think he's good too, Andy, because not only do they go out and they throw him the ball 12 times in this game, they also extended his contract despite knowing that they were going to keep Debo that year. At that point in the offseason, they knew they were going to keep Debo. They had already taken Ricky Pearsall in the first round and Jacob Cowing, rookie receiver, on day 3. And they were trying to sign Brandon Ayuk to an extension. Obviously, that was, you know, a whole situation in and of itself. But odds were still pretty good that Ayuk was going to be a 49er at that point. The situation hadn't totally dissolved yet. So they wanted Jennings on the team. You know, whether they thought he was ever going to have a 3-touchdown game or whatever, you know, that's a whole separate discussion. But I think he's good. The 49ers clearly think he's good. So whatever he does for the long term is a whole separate conversation. What I do think pretty strongly, Andy, is that as weird as it is to say, I feel like he's a guy that you almost have to try to get into your lineup this week because of the situation, because of his talent, and because of obviously what he did last week.
Yeah, absolutely a circle of trust player for the team, goes without saying. And like the things that he does, the things that he's capable of doing outside of receiving contributions are just going to keep him on the field. It's a great offense. And I think the fact that he's already produced this game, helps him level up a little bit, maybe in the eyes of the quarterback, maybe in the eyes of anybody calling plays there. Like there should be more opportunities here. You got to play him. You got to play him this week, though. I mean, you can't sit a guy coming off of 175 and 3 touchdowns. And, you know, every week should be its own thing and I should think of them all separately, but man, that target total and that production, you can't sit it the following week.
Yeah. And obviously it was a great matchup against the Rams. This is a different defense. New England is still a pretty good defense. I want to say just two things before we move on from the 49ers. One, Ayuk is the guy I was talking about at the beginning, where the first 3 weeks are going to be much less instructive than what we thought of Ayuk before the season. You know, people are like, are you going to chart Brandon Ayuk? What's going on? I'm like, yo, this guy's just not ready to play football right now because he didn't do all offseason. I respect these guys. Like, get your money, bro. You know, the whole thing. This is what you should do. He did the right thing in making sure. I mean, he even said he made the situation a little more difficult than it needed to be. But end of the day, He's playing where he wanted to play. He got his money. That's what we should all want for players. But the reality is, as much as these guys don't want to practice and all that stuff, it's important. Going through the rituals and the regimen of football is the only way you're going to prepare to play football. It doesn't matter what he's doing away from the team. He's just not ready to rock like we expect him to be. At some point, he will. At some point, that will catch up. So I'm not worried about Ayuk. Don't care, like, you know, that he's had, he's definitely made some mistakes. He's had some drops. Shanahan, when they were, I mean, because somehow this is the world we live in. He was asked about fantasy points, average separation score stat. And in the press conference, he's like, oh, yeah, the analytics say he's getting open. I agree. Like, he is getting open. He is separating. We faced a lot of zone coverage, the whole thing. He's not worried about it. Nobody should be worried about it. Ayuk's going to be fine. Mm-hmm. The other point I want to make, can we just acknowledge that Brock Purdy was awesome in that Rams game without all of his guys, right? Without Ayuk playing at full strength, Debo's not out there, Kittle's not out there, CMC is not out there. You know, Dalton's not on the podcast. I'm sure he probably talked about it earlier this week. So I'll just do this here. For all of the, like, big-time Purdy haters, I mean, he was awesome in that game despite not having McCaffrey all season long, having a banged-up Debo, no Kittle in this game. He's sixth in EPA per play among quarterbacks, and he's fifth in success rate. Like, I Purdy is a guy that I think is really just continuing to show who he is, which is not just some product of all the guys around him. Does he benefit playing in Shanahan's offense? Of course. But what we ask of great quarterbacks, Andy, is – elevate the players around you. I think Juwan Jennings is a good player, but he caught 11 passes and 3 touchdowns. Like, Purdy deserves some improvisation credit and just arm talent credit for being able to make that happen.
Yeah, you can just watch the Jennings tape from that game and be crazy impressed by Purdy, because there was an improv touchdown to him, which was great to see, a little bit of on the move. There was a play that's kind of like versions of it are like a 49ers staple, but look that way, find the guy like running down the seam. But Purdy like really looked off the safeties on that and like cleared a lane for Jennings. So it was, and then just gorgeous touch on the final throw. It was a great game. And there's really no way to look at it and say, oh, this is purely a product of Shanahan, or this is purely a product of, you know, the supporting cast, because as you say, the supporting cast was down to Jordan Mason and Ayuk and Juwan Jennings.
Yeah, and the Rams defense obviously isn't good, but I love that you brought up that improvisation touchdown, because, you know, I hate to be like the, oh, man, if Mahomes did this, this would lead SportsCenter for a week. But like, yo, if Mahomes had made that play that Purdy made on the improvisation touchdown, like, it probably would have been a Mahomes highlight, you know, all over Twitter, the whole thing. So, I just wanted to give some Purdy credit on that, because I thought it was a really impressive game from him individually, regardless of what was going on around him. We go from a guy in Purdy that I think we probably should start talking about as a maybe clear-cut top 10 quarterback to the best quarterback in the league here, Andy Behrens, for your second burning question, which is, can Andy Dalton basically end the Bengals season?
Yeah, this is like a backdoor way to talk about this game. I think this game is fascinating. First of all, like, the Andy Dalton piece of it, man, the Panthers offense looked fully functional and like a normal NFL offense with some upside. And it was like a switch was flipped. That was crazy. He was great. He made a couple really impressive throws, like the design on a couple of the touchdowns was impeccable. Deontay Johnson blow up game. I'm a little surprised, by the way, that was his single game receiving yardage high. Like, that's crazy to me. 122 yards. That floored me that was like the biggest total he's ever put up. But Deontay now looks like somebody who we can reasonably think of as a top, I don't know, top 12 receiver, certainly this week, against a Bengals defense that was just that offered no resistance to Washington on Monday night. So, fabulous matchup. I mean, the Bengals are now 0-3. You can't go 0-4.
Yeah.
You can't go 0-4. Like, you're now that team has to go what, like 10-3 in order to put themselves in the playoff discussion. They're not going 10-3. So this is about as must win as it gets without being mathematically a must win, right? But it also, you know, on the flip side of this, it sets up a scenario where, man, if the Bengals are just going to have to outscore whatever it is their defense has given up each week, that's the path to Joe Burrow leading the league in passing. It's probably a really good recipe for the Bengals offense generally. And it certainly wasn't that offense's fault that they dropped the game on Monday night. So I think we have like a low key, real shot at a crazy shootout in this one. And the Bengals have everything on the line.
Yeah, I love that. I mean, yeah, there's a real chance this could, weird as it is, it could be the highest scoring game of the week just because Panthers definitely have some defensive personnel issues. I think J.C. Horn's had a pretty good season, but other than that, I mean, it's been kind of a mess for the Panthers defense. The Bengals defense is terrible. Like, it's really, really, really bad. No pass rush on Monday night against the Commanders, who do not have a good offensive line. And I'm glad that you mentioned that Andy Dalton just had some big-time throws in this game, in last week's game, because, as again, we're having this whole conversation about, oh, how do we beat cover two defenses and two high shells and all this stuff? Like, we've said it on the show. You know how you beat it? You don't just dink and dunk underneath. You block it up front. You drop back like a big boy. And you push that thing between the safeties. You push that thing downfield. And you know what the Panthers did with Andy Dalton under center? They blocked that thing up front. Great offensive line play. I haven't seen a pocket like that in Carolina in years. Cam Newton would kill for some of those pockets that Andy Dalton was getting. They blocked that thing up front on the interior. And like on Adam Thielen's touchdown, they pushed it down the field between the two safeties. That was a great example of exactly how you beat, these scary two high defenses that no one can figure out. Andy Dalton can figure it out there. So,
and like you run some route combos that stress a safety that force them to make a choice. Right. And they did it. And man, he hit spectacular throws.
He had spectacular throws. And I mean, we'll see. No Adam Thielen now in this game. Xavier Leggett mentioned him on the podcast with Nate. He's definitely somebody to watch in this game, maybe pick up like as a speculative ad. But yeah, Deontay Johnson, I think, is the top, you know, the 14 receiver this week for sure. There's definitely some bigger names I'd play him over. Like I'd play him over, Devontae Adams. Like I might play Deontay Johnson over Devontae Adams just from a weekly rankings perspective. You know, that's just where he's at this point in this particular matchup. I think Juba Hubbard's a must start. On the Bengals side too, Andy, I'm with you. The offense looks fine. The offense looks good. But this is a kind of a loser leaves town sort of matchup.
Yeah, I can't believe, I mean, I can believe it because this is the way national coverage goes, but I can't believe there were people talking about like what Joe Burrow didn't do to win that game. I mean, come on. he did his best to lead a comeback. Like there's only so much you could do if your own team's defense is giving up points literally every time. There's only so much you can do. I thought he was great. I thought Chase was great. I hope they win enough that, you know, they've still got something to play for throughout the season, because this is, I don't know, he's not there now. I think Dak Prescott now leads the league in passing, which is kind of wild. Just given the way I've been thinking about Dak's season, but like there's a path here for Joe Burrow to finish with like 4,800 passing yards if his own defense is going to give up like 27, 30 points a game.
100%. Yeah. And hey, that would be kind of fun to, that'd be kind of fun to watch. If there's,
hell yeah.
If there's just going to be no defense, why not? But it's not going to be a successful season for the Bengals, which definitely is going to get uncomfortable for everybody involved there. If it's not already, it already looks pretty uncomfortable for what's going on in Cincinnati. All right, let's move on to your third and final question here, Andy, which of course has to do with your Chicago Bears, but it is a good pressing question. In a great matchup, can Caleb Williams shut everyone up? I'm sure it's, talk about uncomfortable. I'm sure it is uncomfortable to listen to local Chicago radio at this point with the way Caleb Williams has started, the way Jaden Daniels looked on Monday night, and the fact that your boy Justin Fields is 3-0, despite, you know, them having the exact amount of offensive touchdowns as they have wins.
Yeah, I got to say, it's some of the national voices that are really that are really getting to me. Because I don't know, maybe it's happening somewhere in Chicago, but like in my circles, even in my circles of like meathead Bears fans who say some of the silliest stuff you'll ever hear, no one's pining away for Justin Fields. Like, I can be happy for the success that Justin Fields is having because I thought he carried himself extremely well. I think he's very easy to root for. He's also, like, he's in his fourth year, and he's in a very different environment now than the one he would be in Chicago. And you cannot simply say, oh, of course the Bears would be 3-0, just like Justin is 3-0 with this team. No, that's not how any of this works. So I am happy for him, but I am not pining away for Justin Fields. That is not a thing that is going on. That is not a thing that I am aware of. I understand the Jaden Daniels comparisons, right? And maybe that's a thing that's going to dog him his entire career. But this does not have a Mitch Trubisky, Pat Mahomes vibe to me, right?
No.
Like, I'm not there. And
this is not Bryce Young, CJ Stroud last year.
No.
Where it's like, oh my God, one guy looks like a dude and the other looks hopeless.
Also, I don't want to be having this conversation every week. And we're having it coming off like, okay, the Bears lose to the Colts. There were a lot of positive developments for Caleb Williams in that game, and he made some wow throws. He also, you know, he missed a couple of deep shots again. He threw one interception that was particularly bad, a ball that you just can't let go in the NFL. You can't even let it go in college. It was a bad throw. But the other interception, like, hit his intended receiver in the chest. You know, it wasn't, you know, it just wasn't a bad game. He finishes with a huge passing total, and again, just made some wow plays. And it was a game in which, even though they don't win, you can feel pretty good about the young quarterback that you're building around. And my God, this is his third NFL game, his third NFL regular season start. He puts up 300 and did better, I think, than Treadwater. I just, in this matchup, we're talking about the Rams defense that Brock Purdy just picked apart. The Rams right now, and some of it is a function of who they've played, but man, they're giving up 9.8 yards per attempt. Mm-hmm. They've given up 7 passing scores on the year. They are a vulnerable defense. Like, we know it. Man, I just want to see Caleb have a day against this team. And then maybe we can all chill for a few weeks on, you know, speculating about whether the Bears have made a franchise altering mistake, which I don't think they have.
Yeah, they're 31st in dropback EPA allowed right now. They're down there with some of the biggest gimme matchups in the league, which is Washington, mm-hmm. which is Cincinnati and Jacksonville. So that is where the Rams defense is right now. It's to be expected. It's not surprising. So, and yeah, I'm with you that the end result wasn't great, but you know, this was the most promising performance I think we've seen from their offense, you know, and I think that Caleb Williams as an individual player has gotten better each and every week, which is what you want to see. I think Jaden Daniels has also gotten better each and every week. The thing is, his third game was just much more of an exclamation than Caleb Williams. And again, it came against one of the four worst defenses in the NFL in Cincinnati. So let's see if Caleb Williams go out there and have that type of game against one of the four worst defenses in the NFL. I think it's totally possible. I think Roma Dunze is coming off a great game. I think Roma's looked awesome so far, and he's playing through an injury, which is pretty impressive.
Yeah.
You know, I think all three of the, like, it's great. I tweeted this morning, but it's great that the draft class that had three awesome receivers at the top, and that was really cool. Even cooler that they all look great in the NFL so far. Yeah. Like, I don't think anybody's coming away with regrets about the three receivers that they took in the top 10, Roma Dunze included. Like, I just want to see more and more of Rome. I am a little nervous about this. Like, all right, is Keenan Allen going to come back and kind of, you know, I don't want to bag on Keenan Allen, but like, his return should not take away from Roma Dunze. His return should not kind of, I think, take away from the prioritization of DJ Moore, which I think they kind of need to do more and more of. There's DJ Moore, I don't think he's had a great start to his season from an individual perspective, but we need to find ways to continue to get him more and more involved and in better and more diverse ways. So would love it if it could cut out the, you know, DeAndre Swift, DeAndre Carter of it all, Keenan Allen coming back.
Yeah.
But we'll see. Definitely not completely in the clear on the Bears offense. Some clear issues still there, mostly in the backfield, Andy, which is kind of what I want to ask you about next. Just a lot of talk about Roschon Johnson this week, a lot of Miles Sanders, DeAndre Swift comparisons, guys leave the Eagles and then immediately become like the worst running back pick you could make in fantasy football. And what should people be doing with this Bears backfield?
Yeah, there's no way to sort of sugarcoat. And this is why I don't think, you know, the Bears would be in a different place with Justin Fields or any other quarterback. Like this line has been terrible.
Yeah.
And it hasn't been good at anything. It hasn't been good at run blocking, hasn't been good at pass protection. There are a couple spots along this line that are just absolute turnstiles, and is a huge problem. And that is, you know, for DeAndre Swift to have a great season, he's got to get a clean run at the line of scrimmage, and that is just not happening. And we saw a lot of Roshan last week, like a lot. I think it was maybe, if it wasn't a dozen touches, it was close to it. He was on the field a lot. And he's at least somebody who, if you're going to get a hand on him at the line of scrimmage or behind the line of scrimmage, he can run through that. Mm-hmm. He's got some mass and some power. And I think we're going to see a fair amount more of him. He was dealing with some injuries, I believe, in the summer, and maybe that's why he got off to the slow start and wasn't involved early on. But he looked really good, and you just, you know, I don't know if it's going to happen for DeAndre Swift. It was a weird signing at the time. I don't generally hate the idea of adding playmakers, you know, even because not every player in the league is available to you. DeAndre was. They went out and got him, whatever. Wasn't my favorite signing of the offseason, but I thought it might work out. Well, it is not working out. And he's always been like a yards before contact guy. Like that was the story of his season last year, when it was really good. And it's its own kind of skill, but those yards are just simply not there in this Bears offense until they get this line fixed. And you can't, you know, it's very difficult to fix an offensive line in season. So I don't know that they're going to get it fixed exactly. It's just going to be really, really tough sledding for DeAndre Swift. And I'm probably more interested in Roshan Johnson right now than any other Bears back.
Yeah, I would say that I do think the Panthers example from last year can be very instructive that there are some running backs that are just better behind bad offensive lines and questionable offensive lines. And yeah, like maybe Roshan Johnson's not going to, like, he could be Chuba Hubbard in this particular situation. Like, is he going to suddenly turn into a league winner that you got off the waiver wire? Maybe not. But damn, he might average more than 1.8 yards per carry. He might get to 3.8, you know, just because maybe he can find those holes a little bit better. So I do think he's a guy that should not be on waiver wires. He should be there and ready to rock. So yeah,
I will also say they got to find a run game because they're putting Caleb in a lot of like second and long situations.
100%. That's a huge difference between you know, the situation that Jaden Daniels has found himself in and that Caleb Williams has found himself in. I mean, this is probably the worst run game in the NFL right now that Chicago's dealing with. So yeah, they got to do something there. And definitely fantasy managers could potentially benefit if Roshan Johnson can come in and take more of those touches. So I'm with you. Bears definitely an exciting team to watch, and I do want to try to get Roma Dunze in lineups this weekend, and hopefully they can continue to get him the ball because he looks great. And yeah, let's see what Caleb can do. All right, with that, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk through the three matchups that Andy says deserve your attention right after this. All right, we're back. Andy, let's stick in the NFC North and focus on this matchup between the Vikings and the Packers.
Man, I love this. I love it in part because, you know, Bears fan and some division rival has to lose. That's exciting. But man, everything about this game is fun. And the coaching on each side to this point in the season has been just masterful, right? That is certainly true on the Minnesota side. It is very much true of Green Bay and what they've gotten out of their offense without their quarterback over the last couple of weeks. Just tremendous. We get an Aaron Jones homecoming in this game. We get the possible return of Jordan Love on one side and Jordan Addison on the other side. And then we've got the ongoing Sam Darnold story, which was a little bit you're an MVP candidate. Well, you go 4-0 out of the gate. And if he has his fourth straight multi-touchdown game and does it at Lambeau, now the MVP talk is probably still not going to happen, but it's less of a joke, right? Like that is a crazy start. So if he doesn't turn back into a pumpkin, and I don't think it's going to happen, he's looked legitimately great. And he's the guy who gets to throw to Justin Jefferson and Jordan Addison. I just think he's in a fun spot. I think, the Vikings defense, as creative as they are, as different as they can be week to week against a Matt LaFleur offense, I'm here for it. I hope we get a healthy Jordan Love in this one. because I hope we can start using our Green Bay receivers again. So I'm just really, really looking forward to this.
I couldn't be more excited about this matchup here. For one, let's stick on the Vikings side for a second. Yeah, look, Sam Darnold, I'm still sort of, I'm going to be basically for the entire season, like waiting for the trapdoor moment for him to, I don't think he's going to totally fall apart. I've let that part of it go, but you know, just is he going to have a bad game at some point? Because I would still say that when he can get the ball out quick, the picture's clear, even when, to his credit, even when he's faced the blitz, like last week against Houston, I thought that he's making quick decisions and he's been very efficient when facing the blitz. When he holds the ball a little bit longer, when the picture is not as clear, maybe that first read isn't open right away, then that's when I think I'm getting a little nervous about like Sam Darnold chaos mode, because that's where he's made some of his mistakes. I don't know about this matchup in Green Bay. I'm still kind of like all over the place with Green Bay's defense, because they've faced, they kind of got a little bit whipped in week one by the Eagles, and then they faced, you know, Will Levis, they faced Anthony Richardson. I don't know if those are the stiffest tests in the world for a defense. So still kind of in discovery mode about how good this Packers defense is overall. But yeah, I think that Sam Darnold is in squarely in the circle of trust. I think Aaron Jones is going to go down as one of the better running back picks in fantasy this year. And I'm excited for when they get damn Jordan Addison and TJ Hockenson back at some point. Like that's another thing we should think about with Sam Darnold and the staying power here. So yeah, definitely a fascinating matchup on that side. On the Packers side, I'm with you, buddy. I want to see Jordan Love too. You know, I want to get back to using Jaden Reed. I think Jaden Reed is kind of a very, I don't know if you can buy him low, just because like people will look at the fantasy rankings and see he's very high up there thanks to what he did in week one, but hasn't done anything the last 2 weeks. I think everybody knows Jordan Love is coming back, but like he's a guy that I'm higher on him now than I was prior to the season, because he has been out there, which is great to see. There's been none of this like, oh, he's a slot only player, he's not a full-time guy. No, he's running a route on 70.9% of the dropbacks. Like they're not messing around with this Jaden Reed stuff. Like he's their best receiver, he's their best offensive playmaker, I think. It's wheels up for Jaden Reed rest of the way. I want to get back to using these guys, but part of me is almost like, damn, can we just like, we've won two games with Malik Willis, we've got a pretty good thing going here. Can we not throw Jordan Love out to the Brian Flores meat grinder a defense? There is part of that in the back of my head.
Yeah, I'm not gonna complain. That's the other thing. I'm not gonna complain if we get another week of this Malik Willis offense. Like this has been really fun, and you and I have talked about it a couple times. This has been really fun to watch the design. Man, the first time they rolled him out there and they got the win against the Colts, like that, I don't know, that's going to go down as one of my favorite. That's probably going to go down as one of my favorite games of the season. I just thought it was ingenious. The run game design in that one was incredible. Huge fan. So that's not going to bother me if we get that offense again. I'm just, you know, I have some rosters that have Jaden Reed on them or have Christian Watson on them, and like Watson is completely unplayable. If we're only going to throw the ball like 14 or 16 times a game, right? Like I need a real pass volume. I need somebody who's pushing the ball down the field to make Christian Watson relevant. And that's just not going to happen with Malik Willis. But I have thought it was really fun to watch what they've done over the last 2 weeks. And I'm totally with you on the Packers defense. I have no idea what they are, because you're right. They gave up some yards in week one, and then it's just not a real test to go against Will Levis. And the way that Anthony Richardson has played over the first 3 weeks, purely as a passer, he's missed so much stuff that it's really hard to assess where that defense is.
Yeah, it's just tough with all these other Packers receivers, because nobody's run a route on more than 56% of the dropbacks so far. Like, even if Jordan Love plays, Christian Watson's kind of a Hail Mary. Dontavian Wicks is merely a bench stash. And obviously, Romeo Doubs, he's a guy you can use for sure. But yeah, Jaden Reed, if Jordan Love is out there, he's a guy I'm getting into the lineups. The Vikings play the most two high coverage in the league. And we talked about this yesterday with Nate, that obviously what you got to do is push the ball downfield. And I think the Packers will push the ball downfield, but Jaden Reed is that security blanket guy who is going to get yards after the catch. So, you know what? I changed my mind looking at the next game on the Packers schedule, week five. They play the Rams in Los Angeles. So let's get Jordan Love. Let's get his feet wet. Yeah, it might not be the biggest offensive showing in the world, but let's get his feet wet in this game. And so then he can really come and tear up the Rams in week five. We've talked around Jaden Daniels a lot in this podcast, Andy, but let's talk about the game that he has got on the schedule this weekend. His Commanders will be going to Arizona to take on the Cardinals.
Yeah, really fun game for obvious reasons. Jaden Daniels last week, I mean, the passing offense, like go to Next Gen Stats and look at the passing charts of his week three performance versus the first 2 weeks of the season. Entirely different, like crazy different. Like he was actually going downfield against Cincinnati and it worked. And this is clearly a strength of his going back to the college days, right? It was no like he opened the season. First game, ADOT was like 5.5. Second game, 5.0. And then last week it was 9.7. And we saw the deep shot to McLaurin. Beautiful ball. Great to see like one of the better receivers in the league actually used at multiple levels and as a downfield threat. Like, I think now that they've shown it to us once, that they've shown like the sort of full stretch the field version of this passing game, there's no way they can go back. It's not, you know, necessarily, I mean, they can, it's Kingsbury, right? Maybe they can go back. Maybe they can be the horizontal rate again, but it was just great to see. And if that's the version of the offense that we get moving forward, it's really exciting for fantasy, really exciting in real life. Great to see. On the other side, we get Kyler Murray going up against what should be kind of a layup defense for him. And, you know, he's had a bit of a roller coaster fantasy season. His best game was a literal perfect game in terms of passer rating, just phenomenal 2 weeks ago. And I think that sort of performance is in play again against Washington. Like, you give him a good matchup and he can crush it. He's also, man, he's run the ball really well. Hasn't done it proactively, I guess I would say. Like, every game he's just rushing like five times and they're mostly scramble situations where he, you know, gets him into a good down and distance situation. But man, he's been pretty fun to watch. These are just two, you know, somewhat similar quarterbacks, both of them on great trajectories this year. And there should be a lot of points and yards in this game.
Yeah, Cardinals defense, they're still fourth worst in terms of net yards per attempt allowed. They're 32nd in dropback success rate allowed. So this is a good matchup for Jaden Daniels. And man, I'm yo-yoing all over the place with my guy, Terry McLaurin, because I like was so just discouraged in the first 2 weeks. And then now I'm like, please, God, let this be the season that Terry McLaurin deserves. Please let this happen. Jaden Daniels is that guy. I love that Terry McLaurin went to Cliff Kingsbury and said, like, let me line up on the right side. I feel like we've got something here. And that it happened. So hopefully Kingsbury can, I mean, and Terry McLaurin, you know, is a guy that he's a needle mover in Washington in terms of who he is, because of just he's been such a leader and such a great player for them and like a fan favorite, a community favorite, the whole thing. So hopefully he's got the credibility to give Kingsbury like some suggestions and Cliff can continue to take it. So hopefully we continue to see more and more of that with McLaurin, because there's no reason he shouldn't continue to smash every single week like he just did last week. Great player. And a guy that looks like a really good pairing with these guys here and Jaden Daniels especially. So also the Cardinals defense has struggled to defend the run a little bit too. That's definitely an area where Washington, they're not going to have Eckler in this matchup. He was already ruled out with a concussion, but Brian Robinson's a very efficient runner. He's probably somebody I would try to start in this matchup. And let's move to the Cardinals side here too, Andy, because look, I mean, yeah, Marvin Harrison should go crazy in this matchup. He's looked fantastic the last 2 weeks. Him and Kyler, Nate talked about it yesterday. They're starting to get that like, oh, you're there, I'm going right to you type of connection. But don't rule out Michael Wilson as like kind of a deeper sleeper in this game. He's run a route on 84% of the dropbacks. He's never going to have like a high target share with Trey McBride and Marvin Harrison out there. But, you know, McBride's a little bit banged up too. He's definitely someone to keep an eye on from a health perspective coming into this game. So Wilson can definitely get loose on this matchup as well.
Yeah, it's a good call out because McBride has to clear the concussion protocol, and that is not a given for him at all. And either Wilson or Dortch or both would clearly benefit if he can't go. It was also a good call out on Brian Robinson, who should just absolutely feast in this one with no Eckler. I do also want to say, you know, but obviously bummed that Eckler's not going to play in this one. He looks good.
He does, yeah.
he this is not last year's version of Austin Eckler. Like, he seems fully recovered from the injury, and especially with him being out this week, I don't know that you'd start Austin Eckler as anything more than a flex necessarily moving forward, but that's a guy that I might be interested in acquiring on the cheap.
Yeah, because if anything happens to Brian Robinson, you know, Eckler's probably going to step into a pretty huge workload there. Whereas I think, mm-hmm. you know, Jeremy McNichols kind of came in as the passing down back at times with Eckler out in week three. I don't think there's another guy on the roster that they're suddenly just going to give carries to. I think Eckler would just get into a pretty mm-hmm. big workload if Brian Robinson was to ever miss time. So pretty encouraging for our guy Austin Eckler there, and happy to see him looking better than he did last year. That is great to see. Let's move on to a team that's been great to see all year, which is the Buffalo Bills going to Baltimore in the Sunday night matchup here. So excited to talk about that one on Sunday in the recap. Man, I mean, so many different ways to go with this, but talk to me about the Ravens specifically before we go into this.
Yeah, well, first of all, the Ravens defense, and I know I've talked about it in prior weeks, they're not really stopping anybody. Mm. It is not, you know, whatever. Yeah, I know you've got last year's version of the Ravens defense in your head, but that's not them this year. They haven't held anybody below 25 points yet. They are dead last in the league against the pass. They give up over 8 yards per pass attempt, almost 300 yards per game. And now they get Josh Allen. So those numbers aren't going to look any better coming out of week four. They have not been great. Offensively, we kind of know what to do with everybody. The tight ends are a mess, but Zay Flowers has been really good. Lamar's been really good. Derrick Henry's obviously been really good. There should be many points available in this one. I like it because I think it's one of those games that screams out that Josh Allen should have to put the ball in the air a bunch. And if he does, that's a, you know, we just saw what he could do against a pretty flatline defense, against the Jaguars. I think this could be another sensational Josh Allen game. He's, surely the QB1 on the week in almost everybody's rankings. Good spot for him, again, against the league's worst pass defense through 3 weeks. So love that. Maybe it's a tough spot for James Cook, but I really just think you want to fire up all your Bills in this one.
Yeah, I mean, look, Cook can still get there as a pass catcher too, even if they don't mm-hmm. run the ball extremely well. But they've been such a good damn run team that I have a lot of faith in them actually getting home in this matchup too. Neither team plays a bunch of man coverage. The Ravens definitely play more man than the Bills, which is important because these are two scrambling quarterbacks. You don't want to play a lot of man coverage. Yeah. The Bills are the least blitz team in the league. So I think they'll probably just drop back and not let Lamar scramble a bunch. I mean, Lamar can do it no matter what, but still, I think that will probably be part of the plan here. I'm interested to see on the Bills side, just continue to follow the receiver kind of rotation there. Khalil Shakir looks so good. I wish he was going to get more targets. He's probably not, but he's the only Bills receiver I think you can reasonably start. And the fact that he's another guy that is going to be available in the short area is good for Josh Allen. On the Ravens side of things, you know, you're right to point out the defense for sure. Like, Dak kind of got going in the fourth quarter against them, and it wasn't like prevent defense or anything like that, as producer Colin noted. They were trying to stop them, and they were not doing it. It was very reminiscent, not quite as extreme because it's not the it's just not the Dolphins offense, but early on in the Mike McDonald era, where they in week two, like the Ravens were kind of cruising to a win, and then the Dolphins just shredded them in the fourth quarter. Yeah. And eventually they won that game. The Cowboys did not. That was definitely a part of this. But yeah, I mean, I'm definitely kind of continuing to monitor the Derrick Henry, kind of ascension. I think he's looked much better. Like every week he's looked a little bit better. They've looked a little more comfortable with him. And the receiver usage continues to be baffling, right, in terms of the tight ends and the pass catchers, because I don't love the way that Zay Flowers has been used. I wish Rashad Bateman got more than just a bunch of deep X receiver routes. His touchdown was great against the Ravens, like, and he ran a route from the slot off the line of scrimmage, like not just deep X receiver stuff. Like, let's get more of that. So, and obviously I think Mark Andrews would be great if he was more involved. So I don't really know that any of these Ravens receivers are must or pass catchers, period, are must starts in fantasy, but do you have like a lean any different way here?
Yeah, I just really enjoy Zay Flowers, and I think the best Zay Flowers games are still ahead of us, and he's going to end up having a really good receiver. He's the one that I trust more than any other. I would agree that like if you play in a 10-team league and you're only starting a couple of receivers, there's nobody here that's an absolute must start. Bills defense has been good too. Like Bills defense is good sort of both ways. So it's not a simple matchup. The other thing that I really enjoy about this game, by the way, is that, Lamar is so in the heads of so many Bills fans.
Really?
You know, just, you know, the issue of Lamar winning MVPs that they feel should go to their guy. Right. Almost like the number of times that I see Bills fans in my Twitter feed, tweeting somewhat randomly about Lamar anytime something goes well is wild. So I like that they're actually meeting. They're both just absolutely great players, and neither one of them deserves criticism. And Josh Allen is on an MVP trajectory right now. So put up a huge game against against Baltimore, and he's going to be by far the front runner.
Yeah, I mean, a primetime game, island game with two top five quarterbacks. I'm sure there won't be extreme takes on either side about the quarterback who loses this game. Yeah, I'll tell you what. Look, I've always been an unabashed Josh Allen fan. I think he's clearly the second best quarterback in the NFL. I've thought that for a long time now. And this year he's making it even more clear that, yeah, you're right. Mm-hmm. He's on an MVP trajectory. So Bills fans, like, he keeps this up, he's probably going to win the MVP this year, and he probably should. Final thing, Andy, before we let you go. Producer Colin just he says we got to give an honorable mention here to the damn Seahawks at Lions game on Monday night, one of the two Monday night games. Thankfully, I think you could ignore whatever's going on with the Dolphins and Titans over there. Put put this game on the main screen here. I know the history of this matchup, was tweeting about this with Sigmund Bloom today. The history of this matchup has been a lot of high scoring games, Andy Behrens. And I generally think, like, yeah, we're trying to get all the kids in the pool here. You're probably trying to start all your main Seahawks and your main Lions players. But these two defenses are much improved this year. That's my one note on this game. The Seahawks are first in defensive success rate. The Lions aren't quite as great from like a metric standpoint, but, you know, they're 12th in EPA per play allowed. I think overall, this is an improved defense, maybe not quite to the level of Seattle, but these are two pretty good defensive teams. I wonder if we could see, you know, I think it's going to be a good fantasy game, but maybe a little bit less scoring than maybe the history of this matchup.
Yeah. So the issue here on the Seattle side, like, this is sometimes it's okay to just say, hey, we're going to learn some things from this game. Like, I don't have to, I don't know. I hate to present myself as if I just know everything going in. I do not know what the Seahawks defense is. Cause this is one of those examples where the numbers are so good for them right now. Like, they're giving up like 130 passing yards per game, fewer than 5 yards per pass attempt. I think only one passing touchdown. Like, it's great. They played the Broncos and the Patriots and the Skylar Thompson led Dolphins.
Totally fair. So, totally fair.
So I don't know. I know they're better. I don't think that they are what the numbers currently say they are, and they are about to get a test, right? Like, I don't know that we'll have a perfectly healthy Sam Laporta in this one, but Williams, Amon-Ra, Jahmyr Gibbs, like, they are going to get stressed like they have not been stressed in prior weeks. So it is a learning environment for all of us with respect to the Seattle Seahawks. I'm not sure that's a defense we need to that we actually need to actively avoid. They look like it on paper. But again, there's a quality of opponent issue there that I can't get past. And that happens when we're only 3 weeks into the season.
Yeah, I think the fact that Ryan Grubb has looked great from a pass game design standpoint, they've tried to establish a physical run game, but also when it's not working, they've gone away from it, which is probably the case in this game, because the Lions, from a defensive perspective, they're really good against the run. They still have some issues from like covering slot receivers and receivers over the middle specifically. So I think this is a good week to fire up JSN in this matchup, particularly.
I was just going
to
say JSN bounce back game. Yeah,
absolutely. And look, like I said this yesterday, he's going to go up and down. Okay. That's why he was like a 7th round pick or something like that. He's going to have games like he did in week 2. He's going to have games like he did in week 3, where he catches 3 passes for 39 yards. That's the way the position works. Unless you're one of the top receivers in the league, that's the way the position works. And even those guys can have 3 for 39 games. Things happen. So this looks like a good week to fire him up. And yeah, just on the Lions side, I will just note that obviously, yeah, it's a test for sure. Bigger test than Bo Nix and all these other guys they've played so far. But, you know, Jared Goff is 20th in terms of passing success rate. EPA per dropback, he's pretty low there too. It's not been quite the Lions offense from a pass game perspective that we have anticipated to see. So I am curious when we're going to get that game from the Lions passing offense. Obviously not having Laporta would be a bit of a blow there, but and offensive line injuries too. Are starting to stack up. Frank Ragnow might be the best center in the league. He's dealing with a serious injury. So certainly will be worth monitoring how these two teams perform on Monday night and whether we get that kind of fantasy bonanza that I think a lot of people are anticipating. Andy, appreciate you, buddy. We covered a ton of ground in a very critical week four. Thanks as always for doing it, and good luck to your Bears. I hope the national media can leave you alone after this week.
I'm a little uptight about this one, but yeah, this is a really fun week. I can't wait for it.
All right. Thanks again to Andy Behrens. We will see you after the dust settles on Sunday for the recap show. After the break on this show, Tara Roberts joins me to share her make or break players for week four. Can't wait to see what she has in store for us right after this. All right, we're back, and joining us now, as she does every week here on the preview show, is Tara Roberts to bring her make or break players for week number four. Tara, what's going on?
Doing good. I feel like last week was an overall strong week. We got good performances from our guys that we needed in terms of bounce backs, like Jamar Chase. So Drake London was good again. Overall strong week, in a good place. We're heading into week four feeling good.
I'm feeling much better about things heading into week number four, maybe than I did in week two, week three. But that's how the season goes, Tara. As Andy and I talked about at the beginning, it's always like you get the week one kind of overreactions. You freak out about things. I know you came on the show right after week one and, oh my God, Drake London, the tilt and everything. And I wouldn't say it's been awesome or amazing, like face melting for Drake London, but we've got two touchdowns in back-to-back games. We are back on track. We're never off track on this particular show where, like I said, Tara brings us her make or break players every single week. This is kind of 5 to 6 players. It's not a strict like start this guy, sit this guy type of segment, but we're trying to just lay out expectations, range of outcomes. So maybe as you all out there, because we don't ever spoon feed you information on this show, we give you information, you then make decisions. That's how we do it here. You can make informed decisions after Tara kind of outlines the range of outcomes for these players. So Tara, why don't you start off by giving me your first player here for week four?
I'm going to start us off with J.K. Dobbins as the player that I want to talk about first. Yeah, I feel like this is an interesting one because Dobbins is someone who has shot up rankings, right? And a lot of times when we talk about these make or break players, it's guys that tend to be in those flex areas, but Dobbins is being ranked in a point where you're with him as an RB2. But unfortunately, because of circumstances with the team and matchup, I feel like he's just a very risky option in week four. At this point, we know he's the lead back. We know he's been fantastic. We know the volume is going to be there. But we've got Justin Herbert dealing with an injury. It creates this little multifaceted issue for the Chargers team as a whole. So we can kind of look at this and say, okay, like Justin Herbert, obviously, he's saying that he wants to play. The Chargers have a bye week coming up after this week. So honestly, I feel like it could go either way here. Let's say that Justin Herbert does play and he's limited and they are looking at this and it's kind of the same situation of even if he wasn't on the field and they were starting Taylor Heinicke, the defense here maybe wants to stack the box. It's going to be tougher sledding. They're going to try and say, okay, Justin Herbert, you're dealing with an injury. We want you to throw on us. So we could get this boost in volume from him potentially if they don't want to overload Justin Herbert or we get Taylor Heinicke and they don't want him to throw the ball at all. And we get this volume for Dobbins. But unfortunately, is it going to be good volume if he suffers an efficiency and there's limited goal line opportunities? And then on top of that, we've got this terrible matchup situation with Kansas City, a defense that has shut down guys like Derrick Henry and Bijan Robinson, holding both of them to under 50 yards. This could be a major issue for Dobbins this week. So while I do have him ranked, you know, I'm not sitting here and pushing him back into the rankings. Yeah, he's a top 20, but I feel like we've got this situation where there's a boom or bust nature with him and it makes him more volatile. And he's someone that I'm looking at and saying, if you've got a better option, a more reliable option in terms of a matchup, you might want to tilt that way.
Yeah, I'm almost exactly where you are with J.K. Dobbins this week. Actually, the player that I'll talk about in my keys to winning segment later. I looked at them in back-to-back kind of rankings, and I went, I'm going to take the guy that I have in the segment later on over J.K. Dobbins, and when we get to that player, to kind of help you table set here a little bit, because I'm with you. There's so many different ways you can talk yourself into the Dobbins or out of the Dobbins start this week, because it's not a great matchup. Although Kansas City, you know, from a run defense perspective, they are ranked 29th in success rate allowed. They haven't been the production hasn't necessarily been there, but a lot of that can be game script related, of course. It's not as if the Bengals present like a great rushing attack in week two. The Falcons, kind of a weird game there. Obviously, week one with Derrick Henry, they're still figuring that out. So I'm not quite sure how I feel about Kansas City as a run defense. I can go one way or the other, but I just really have a tough time, Tara, thinking like, yeah, I want to start a running back who admittedly did play 65% of the snaps, has looked good this year. In the last game, he did get that playing time bump, as you mentioned. I have a tough time thinking like, yeah, the Chargers are probably going to sit Justin Herbert. They should. I don't know. Jim Harbaugh, you know, tough football guy, the whole thing. They probably should sit him this week. They're dealing with injuries elsewhere. Both starting tackles are not going to play in this game. They might be out for an extended stretch. I want to start the starting running back of that team against the Kansas City Chiefs. That's a tough sell for me.
Yeah, it is. It is. I want to be on Dobbins' side. I'm loving this bounce back here, but at the same time, like, it's just something that's so risky and the matchup presents an issue. You know, when you look at, like, you know, the success rate and Derrick Henry and Bijan Robinson, they got touchdowns. So maybe that has something to do with, you know, goal line opportunities, and you can move the ball on Kansas City's defense. But if it's Taylor Heinicke, I just don't have the faith that he can move the ball on Kansas City's defense. So that's what kind of holds me back there.
God, and I'll tell you what, if it's, I hope it's Taylor Heinicke, not Easton Stick. I know no disrespect to Easton Stick, but like they just traded for Heinicke a little while ago. He's still pretty new to the team, but at least we've seen Heinicke start NFL games before and move successful offenses down the field. And, you know, there are some guys that are interesting in the pass catching room. I like the way Ladd McConkey is playing. I like the Quentin Johnson usage, but yeah, I'm probably more out than in on J.K. Dobbins, which means he's probably going to get 15 carries for 33 yards, but get that one touchdown to make his fantasy day look good. And I will look like an idiot, Tara, for saying that.
we'll look like it together, so that's okay.
All right, well, that makes me feel a little bit better. Okay, let's move on to your next player here on your list.
So I'm cheating on this one. It's players, plural. It's both of these Seattle running backs, Kenneth Walker and Zach Charbonnet, because I've kind of looked at this and tried to analyze it from various scenarios. And I just don't see a scenario where there's a super positive outcome here for either one of these guys. Now, we don't 100% know what the status is going to be of Walker right now, but when we're looking at the Seattle backfield, you know, I feel like they kind of make this list because, one, they've been highly successful. It feels like a no-brainer. Whichever one is the lead back, right, we're starting them. In week one, Kenneth Walker, absolutely fantastic, over 100 rushing yards and a rushing touchdown. Week two, Charbonnet took over, obviously, finished his RB12 in half PPR. Week three, he continued that again. He finished his RB6 in half PPR. The run game has been thriving here. The offense as a whole has been thriving here. But when I look at this matchup against Detroit, it is a major problem here. Again, we've got this situation where we've got another defense that has been absolutely dominant versus some of the better running backs in the league. They shut down guys like Kyren Williams and James Conner. They're allowing just an average of 2.7 yards per carry to running backs. There is not a worse fantasy matchup out there. I think they're allowing the least amount of fantasy points to opposing running backs. So when we're looking at this, and then we throw in the fact that we've got a potentially ambiguous health situation here with a horrific matchup, things get very shaky for me. Maybe if Kenneth Walker is out, I can say, look, volume, Charbonnet, good offense, I can lean into that one. But what if we get a scenario where both of these guys are active, and knowing him, Walker coming off of this multi-week injury, are they going to throw him into an immediate, you know, lead back role, massive workload? No, it's probably going to be a little bit of a limitation on him, both of these guys being utilized. And if you get that, them kind of splitting workload in that backfield, and then we've got a terrible matchup as well, we've got a potential bust week. Now, I recognize that sitting either one of these guys is tough. I get that for sure. I've probably got a lineup with Kenneth Walker somewhere where if he's active, I've probably got to run with it. But if you have the ability to pivot and both of these guys are active and we don't really have any kind of feel for what the split's going to be in a bad matchup, it's a very volatile situation.
Yeah, this one's tough too, Tara, because it's a Monday night game. So there's a good chance that we might not know for a minute if Kenneth Walker is going to play or not. Now, listen, I'm with you that if we get word that Kenneth Walker is going to miss this game and it's Zach Charbonnet, it's going to be tough to sit him, right? Just because he's the lone back in an offense that should be pretty good. So I will pitch you this question, though, because I think this helps sort of make the decision. Andy and I talked about this in the first half of the show, kind of talking about this game in particular. You know, it's been thrown around a lot that the last few times the Seahawks and the Lions have gotten together, we've gotten these kind of fantasy bonanza shootout type performances. I would say that so far, both of these defenses, and I know Seattle's not played some great teams, but both of these defenses have played above expectation. I think they are better than the units that we're used to in Seattle and Detroit, respectively. So which way do you see this game going? Do you see this being like both these teams are trading points? There's a lot of there is a big fantasy bonanza here, or is it going to be maybe a little lower scoring than many people think?
I'm worried we might get a dud. And the problem with that is that we can't, we can't sit guys like Amon-Ra, and we can't sit DK, and like that's not a reality here. And hopefully maybe, you know, tougher coverage allows some secondary options. Maybe we get another strong game from Jackson Smith and Jigba stepping up if that coverage is too tough on DK Metcalf. But yeah, I'm worried. Again, we've seen these offenses be strong, but at the same time, the defenses are for real. They're creating havoc, especially in the pass rush. And you get worried that this is going to be those games where we're expecting all of these superstar talents to thrive, and it just turns into a dud.
Yeah, I mean, right now BetMGM has the total set at 46.5, which is, you know, pretty high. It's as high as Ravens and Bills on Sunday night. But, you know, I could totally see that going either way. I think that's a really fair line. Now, if it was set at something like 49.5 or something like that, I'd probably take the under on that. But that's a really fair line where I could see it going one way or another. So I think that how you feel about this game should then dictate how we feel about these running backs, because it's not a great matchup. They could be splitting carries. If it's Charbonnet, you're just kind of hoping he's getting 20 touches and he's finding his way into the end zone. But just pitting these two backs together that we talk about, who do you feel better? Like, let's say it's Charbonnet, no Kenneth Walker versus J.K. Dobbins, who we just talked about.
I think I would honestly lean towards Charbonnet with the volume and knowing that he's in a better offensive situation. Lean towards both difficult defensive matchups, but lean towards the better offensive situation.
I'm with you there. I feel the exact same way, especially because he's probably going to get more touches one way or another. The LA Chargers don't run a lot of plays. Seattle's playing a little bit faster than we're used to seeing this offense play. Okay, let's move on to the next player on your list.
This one is we're going a little bit further down in the rankings here, but still kind of in that solid flex area. It's Carson Steele is the guy. It was fantastic seeing him step in as the clear lead back in the Kansas City offense last week. Had 17 carries, 72 yards, solid average yards per carry there. But again, unfortunately, and this was expected, he wasn't involved in the pass game. And when we look at that Kansas City offense, look at Isaiah Pacheco, we know Isaiah Pacheco had to earn the trust in that offense in order to get that third down work, in order to become somebody who had that receiving upside. And one game is not enough for Carson Steele to gain that trust, especially when you've got Samaje Perine on the roster and they do trust him. Now you've got Kareem Hunt coming into the mix, and I'm not saying like we're not going out there and saying, man, we're about to roll with Kareem Hunt. But at the same time, if they start kind of working him in and saying, oh, we'll get you up to speed a little bit, a couple carries here, let's get a goal line touch and see what that looks like. Let's throw you in on third down. You're just kind of taking away from that potential fantasy upside for Carson Steele, because with him, you want the volume, you want the yardage, and we need him to have those goal line opportunities because he doesn't have that receiving upside. Now, on top of that, you know, this makes it a little bit more ambiguous because we're facing a Chargers defense that is very unproven. They haven't played literally anybody, any competent offense, unfortunately. We got the Raiders that they played, Panthers under Bryce Young. We have the Steelers as well, all places with offensive limitations. So I feel like we don't truly know the real strength of this Chargers defense at this point. You know, we can base it off of the talent that they have on the field, but combine that ambiguity of the defense with the fact that we know that Carson Steele doesn't have that receiving upside. It feels like a situation where we're going to throw this guy into a lineup and we're hoping we're dealing with injuries and we're saying, okay, we need this. It's an RB1. Get in there and we're going to get seven points and that's it. And there's just so limited upside if that. So I get worried that we're throwing Carson Steele into our flex options here, into the kind of that low end RB2, high end RB3 range. And there's not a ton of positive outcome that can come here for him.
Did you see what Andy Reid had to say about Carson Steele when asked in a press conference? He's like, he gives you an honest down. Which I feel like is a perfect way of kind of describing.
Yes.
It's kind of a perfect way of describing Carson Steele's game. Just like, hey, run downhill, baby, and like, let's get it done. I will say for Carson Steele, two things kind of in his credit. Number one is that he did run more routes than Samaje Perine, 18 routes to 11 for Perine, but only two targets, whereas Perine got four targets, again, on fewer routes. So when there is a guy that's going to be involved in passing situations, it is going to be Perine, especially because he's the better blocker and things like that. So, and now we do have the Kareem Hunt factor. I'm really not sure what to do about Kareem Hunt. I really don't have like a strong feeling there, a strong take one way or another. But like Carson Steele was definitely the main rusher, 17 carries to 6 for Perine, 51.5% of the total team attempts. And you would think that if this does become a situation where Kansas City, Kansas City is blowing out a Chargers team with, we were just talking about Taylor Heinicke and the B team there on the offensive line. This could be a situation where they're putting the ball in Carson Steele's hands over and over and again late in the game. So I think that's the story you got to tell yourself there. But the Chiefs really aren't blowing anybody out right now. You know, their offense doesn't look like it's firing on all cylinders. So, you know, while they can obviously go in and handle a Taylor Heinicke or Easton Stick team, you know, are we going to get a situation where they're clearly controlling it in the third, fourth quarter and they can just run out the clock? That is kind of, I'm a little skeptical right now.
Yeah, I agree on that one. On top of that, you kind of wonder at what point we see more upside from Patrick Mahomes. It's always been difficult to, like, when I love Isaiah Pacheco, but there was always the reality of him having just like a slightly capped upside because of the amount of touchdowns that go through Patrick Mahomes' hands in the red zone traditionally. And, you know, you kind of wonder if we see an even higher uptick right now, if they need to lean on that in the offense. And maybe that a lot of that comes down to game flow and whether or not the game is close. Are they really up? So there's a lot of factors here, but I agree with you on that one. There's a scenario where we could get some additional Carson Steele, but it feels very risky this week.
I probably like, it's again, just to compare these backs we just talked, I think I like Carson Steele a little bit more than J.K. Dobbins this week, but we're talking like back-to-back spots in rankings. So these are all really three interesting guys to compare. So give me another player from your list here.
I'm going to go out of order here, since we're kind of on this running back train in the same general area. Keep us on there with Jerome Ford in Cleveland. And man, Cleveland's offense is, it's a mess all over. But, you know, Ford started off the season, decent fantasy production in week one, appearing to be the clear RB1. And we're feeling decently good about it. Then in week two, we saw that weird dip in touches where he, despite being fine in terms of production there, again, we had him being slightly limited and Donta Foreman getting the bulk of the carries there. Then in week three, it flipped back again. But the fantasy output was kind of disappointing just because the Cleveland offense as a whole was just kind of disappointing, other than, you know, the boom touchdowns to Amari Cooper. But overall, they still just look like a mess. And I feel like this is a weird situation where I like Ford. I trust him as a runner. I don't trust the Cleveland offense. And it creates this weird juxtaposition for me, because this is an excellent matchup against the Raiders, who we thought coming into the season would be a little, you know, a little higher up in terms of their defense, but they're right now in bottom 10 for fantasy points allowed to running backs. So when we look at this, it should be like on paper, a full go situation. We shouldn't feel uncomfortable with it. But at the end of the day, we just can't trust this Cleveland offense. And we technically can't really trust the workload in terms of carries and share out of the backfield and snaps. So on top of that, again, I just keep saying on top of that, on top of that, on top of that. Now we've got Ford dealing with a potential injury here. So we've got what should be a perfect matchup in a great situation, but there's so many factors here to consider. Like, what if he's dealing with this knee injury and Stefanski says, okay, you're going to be active, but maybe we just don't need to push it with you. And we get these limited touches again. So I feel so uncomfortable with Ford this week, unfortunately.
I feel uncomfortable with basically everything about the Browns right now, just with how the offense looks. They're second in neutral pass rate right now, the Cleveland Browns. They're 26th in dropback EPA. Everybody else in the top four, which is the Bengals, the Rams, the Seahawks, all of those teams are some of the better teams, like from an efficiency perspective. Seahawks are eighth. The Rams are definitely an above average team, despite some of the injuries there, or they're right around average. Bengals are an above average team. Like, and the Browns are down there in the basement in terms of passing efficiency. It's not working. Nothing's working with Watson. Don't think it ever will. We got to be on Jameis watch here pretty soon. It is what it is. I don't feel bad for Watson at all in this situation. So I just don't feel great about Ford, even if he was healthy, almost regardless, just because of the offense that he plays in. So he's given you some weeks. That's for sure. You'd think that, like, hey, a game against the Raiders would potentially be a get right spot. But I don't know. I'm with you. Vibes are bad. He's my least favorite back of all the ones we've talked about so far.
Yeah, exactly. I feel like this just kind of cascaded perfectly. I agree. Like, if I was leaning towards a guy, like I'll lean towards a guy like Charbonnet and take that risk over playing Jerome Ford here, just because, again, the situation is just such a mess. We're on Jameis Winston watch and we're crossing our fingers. Like, that's what the people want to see. That's what we want to see for our fantasy sake. Just make it happen.
Just make it happen already. Like, give me a break. Enough already with the Deshaun Watson stuff. Like, yes. Yeah. Okay. Who's next on the list here?
Finally, a wide receiver. And I feel like this is going to be a more positive one. Yes, this one is a more positive one for us. It is Rome Odunze coming off, and this is the last one as well, coming off of the best performance of his very young career, finishing as the wide receiver 7.5 PPR, 6 receptions, 11 targets. Again, you know, catch rate, not so fantastic, but this has kind of been par for the course there with Chicago in terms of struggles. Got the touchdown. So we're coming in here positive, but you have to wonder, is this something that we can immediately trust? Are we immediately saying this is a guy that I feel comfortable with as an every week flex option for me, and I'm not going to question it? Because there's a couple of things we kind of got to contextualize here in terms of the production for Rome Odunze. Obviously, that spike in production was tied to a dramatic spike in attempts for Caleb Williams. 52 times through the ball, very unrealistic volume here. Then we look at the matchup as well. Indianapolis' defense has been really struggling through the beginning portion of the season. So maybe this was just an excellent matchup. Then you add on to the fact that the Bears were without Keenan Allen. He is potentially returning this week. We don't know for sure. But if he were to return this week, obviously that would affect the target share within the offense. We've already got DJ Moore that we're dealing with. The reality is here is that we saw what we wanted to see out of Rome Odunze. He looked like the alpha in that offense. The usage was fantastic. We loved seeing him deep, but at the same time, it still is a volatile situation. So I feel like we got to proceed with caution on this one, especially when it comes to situations where there are unfavorable matchups. But luckily for us, this is a good situation. We finally got a favorable matchup here for one of these guys. The LA Rams defense, I think we talked about this before, you know, the LA Rams, they've been struggling. They've been trying to pull this together. And their team overall, just dealing with injuries. And the defense has just been very vulnerable through the air. And in particular, the weird thing about their defense being vulnerable, and we saw this in week 1 and 2 in particular, the wide receiver 2 has actually been the one that has been consistently thriving against this Rams defense. So maybe they're able to defend the wide receiver 1 well, and it's the wide receiver 2 that sticks through. We saw it last week with Juwan Jennings. We saw it in week 1 with Jameson Williams. So while this is kind of a volatile situation, I feel like we have a good transition into another poor matchup, into a situation that maybe favors Rome Odunze more than DJ Moore and Keenan Allen. So we look at this and we say, okay, I don't know. I don't trust this Chicago offense. I don't trust Matt Eberflus. I don't trust Shane Waldron, but I like the situation here and I want to ride the uptick in production. And Rome is someone who I feel a little bit more comfortable with as a flex option this week, given the matchup.
Yeah, look, I would say if there's no Keenan Allen in this matchup, he's a top 30 receiver, which means he's probably going to find a slot in your lineup. But yeah, yeah. With Keenan Allen, it's a little more difficult. I really hope they don't phase out Rome Odunze for Keenan Allen, just because I think Rome is such a good player, and him and DJ Moore clearly have a connection. They're going to get that chemistry down. You want them building that chemistry. And yeah, obviously 50 attempts might be unrealistic, Tara. The Bears are, I talk about the damn Browns being so high in terms of neutral pass rate. The Bears are seventh right now in terms of neutral pass rate because they cannot run the ball for the life of themselves. And yeah, maybe Roschon Johnson comes in there and fixes everything. I don't know about that. The offensive line's an issue, as we talked about with Andy earlier. So yeah, I'm kind of on both sides here with Rome Odunze. Again, Keenan Allen out. If he missed this game, I think that Rome would be in my lineups. Yeah. If not, then I don't know though. I'm just looking at my rankings right now where I have Rome as a top 30 receiver this week. You know, the names behind him, it's like Brian Thomas, it's Calvin Ridley, it's Khalil Shakir, Rashid Shaheed. Do we get down to like Jalen Waddle, Ladd McConkey? I'm not feeling great about that. Like Michael Pittman, yeah. Do I want to play Michael Pittman over Rome Odunze? I don't really want to play any of those dudes over Rome, even if Keenan Allen's out there, just because the matchup is so good. And I think Rome is just on a rocket ship ascension right now.
Yeah. He's also in a little area with guys that are dealing with injuries. We got like Deontay Johnson, Tank Dell. So maybe it just kind of continues to push him up the guy that's going to be the more reliable asset here.
All right. That was your last one, right?
That was it. That was it.
Good. I mean, we finished on a positive note with Rome Odunze. I'm glad we finished on a positive note with Rome as opposed to finishing with a member of the Cleveland Browns. That makes me feel better. But what always makes me feel better is the segment that we end on each and every week here on the preview show. Let's toss it to our keys to winning, presented by Toyota, the official automotive partner of the NFL. And as always here, and just like heading into week four, our key to winning is picking some guys. You need to start these players. These are going to make the difference in your flex spot. Yeah, you've got some options. That's great. Let's find a way to get these players in your lineup because they are going to be your keys to winning. So I'll throw this to you first, Tara. Who is your keys to winning player this week?
My keys to winning player is T. Higgins this week. Last week, I rarely trust T. Higgins in particular, coming off of an injury that initial week. I always give him 1 week to ramp up before I feel confident in playing him. But despite that belief, he was actually pretty encouraging last week. Played 90% of snaps, so we're feeling like he got the proper amount of rest there. He's fully healed. There were no limitations on the field. Target share was obviously a little bit of a bummer right there with catching 3 of his 6 targets. Solid, not spectacular, but again, this was his first game back from the injury, and obviously Ja'Marr Chase really dominated in that performance. This week, I expect to see more targets, and I love this matchup against Carolina. Their defense has struggled, but we also have the addition of now we've got a confident Carolina team here, a Carolina team that is capable of pushing Cincinnati's flailing defense. So maybe we get a little potential shootout in this game, in this Andy Dalton triple revenge game. I think he's had several before, but I think he's going to pull through for us and give us a little bit more production. So we get this back and forth here, and Carolina's secondary has some strong players, maybe focusing on Chase, and that'll give the opportunity here for T. Higgins to thrive as the wide receiver too.
Love that call. I think T. Higgins, yeah, let you down a little bit last week. Some plays that could have been called back due to penalties, some near misses. I think T. Higgins is going to hit for you. And I'm going to stay in that maybe freaky, weird little shootout Andy Dalton revenge game, but I'm going to go to the other side of the ball here. Carolina Panthers running back Chuba Hubbard. Look, a lot of reasons why I think you should play Chuba Hubbard this week. One, he's the top back here. Miles Sanders is involved, but Chuba had 60% of the team carries. He had 5 targets on 8 routes. He's still this lead back here. This is the guy who right now is going to be that top back for you. But another reason why you probably want to start Chuba Hubbard is this might be the last Chuba Hubbard start, or at least clear cut start, because Jonathan Brooks is coming back. So if you have Chuba Hubbard on your team, why'd you draft him except not to start him when the offense is looking good finally? And Jonathan Brooks is coming back here pretty soon, if probably next week. So this is Chuba Hubbard's kind of final time to shine for your fantasy team. And the biggest thing here is, yeah, he's the feature back. That's great. But this is a great matchup, as you mentioned. The Bengals defense is hapless. The Bengals defense might be one of the worst in the league. They're certainly one of the worst run defenses in the NFL right now. So I feel like Chuba Hubbard is set up to shine in week four for your fantasy teams. He is a guy who I have right now as a top 20 back this week, which means, hey, unless you're really, really strong at running back, you probably got to find a way to get Chuba Hubbard in your maybe running back two spot, if not just your flex spot, certainly outright. I think this is the week to get Chuba Hubbard in your lineup. And with that, Tara, we did it. Week four is in the books. Shout out to you. There's great, great players here. I feel like the running back position is tough right now. It always is, but it's a little more. I'll tell you what, I feel better about the running back position, Tara, here in week four this year than I normally do in week four. And I think a lot of that is, you know, some of the injuries at wide receiver, sure, but a lot of it is just the way teams are playing right now. The run game is back. You know, you can run into some of these too high defenses and everything like that. So I feel like this is an important discussion to sort of table set some week four expectations here.
Completely agree. Running backs are back on the table.
Running backs are back on the table, and hopefully winning is back on the table for you all out there in week four. That is going to do it for us today. Thanks again to Toyota, the official automotive partner of the NFL. Next time you hear from us on this show, week four Sunday will be in the books, and Andy Behrens and I will be here to break down everything that happens on Sunday. It's a pretty sick slate, a lot of games to go through, a ton of just very fascinating ones. So can't wait to break that all down with Andy later on Sunday. But for now, we're out.